All right, welcome. It is Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN Loves. We talked about Halloween and my extreme disappointment over the dearth of Halloween children showing up at my doorstep last night. But I was kind of pleased to be able to take the unwrapped candy, the candy that was still in the packaging, back to the store today. That's a little trick that I learned along the way of trick-or-treating. Just don't open up all the bags and put them in a bowl. Just open the packages one at a time. That way, if they're extra at the end of the night, you take them back to the store. Because if you're anything like I am, I don't need candy sitting around the house as much as I don't have much of a sweet tooth any longer. Why tempt fate? And by the way, the sweet tooth apparently does not extend, the ban anyway, does not extend to Reese's peanut butter cups, because I was a very bad boy and I made some very bad decisions. So they were the first ones to get handed out to the kids last night. Like, help me, save me from myself. I think these may be possessed. We're going into your mouth. We're going into your mouth. No! I was powerless to resist. Possibly possessed. But in all seriousness, I want to talk about something here that is not terribly pleasant to talk about. But I think we need to talk about it, because so many of you have boys or girls, or maybe yourselves, who are involved in playing hockey. And I don't mean to end the show on a negative note or skeeve anybody out here. But here in Buffalo, on two occasions, one at the old Memorial Auditorium back in 1989, and the other at what is now the HSBC Arena. Wait, it's still the HSBC Arena, right? They haven't changed it in the past week that I know of?
It's a KeyBank Center now.
Oh, okay,
but
yeah,
I still call it HSBC Arena.
I still call it the Crossroads. I thought Crossroads was the best name ever for any structure ever built, including the Coliseum. Okay, I'm just saying, they should have kept it the Crossroads and done without the corporate dollars. But I digress. But in Buffalo, goaltender Clint Malarchuk almost died on the ice. How Clint Malarchuk did not die on the ice, it boggles the mind. I seem to remember hearing after the tragedy of Clint Malarchuk, who survived, that only recently the training staff of the Buffalo Sabres had training in how to deal with severe trauma to the arteries of the neck. And the fact that Clint Malarchuk survived was, if that wasn't a miracle, I don't know what was. Then, just a few decades after that, was it a Florida Panther by the name of Richard Zednik? Was that the guy?
Yeah, he played for the Florida Panthers.
And Richard Zednik caught a teammate's skate in the throat. And immediately, and he saved his own life, he immediately skated to the bench and immediately got medical care. Now, with the kinds of injuries suffered by Clint Malarchuk and by Richard Zednik, folks, I got to tell you something. I mean, we here in Buffalo are no stranger to those traumatic injuries involving a skate blade to the neck. Now, I do not encourage anybody to go looking for the video, but you'll do it if you want to anyway. But the Adam Johnson video. Adam Johnson played for the Pittsburgh Penguins. He was born in 1994. He's a young man. He was born in Hibbing, Minnesota, same place Bob Dylan was born. And Adam Johnson lost his life playing hockey. And I will tell you what the video shows. Adam Johnson was on the left wing. His teammate was kind of to his right, skating. The opposing player was to his right, skating toward Adam Johnson. He was checked. And the opposing player's skate, let me know if I'm getting anything wrong, because I watched it on a very small screen. The opposing player's skate went right into the neck of Adam Johnson. Adam Johnson collapses. Immediately, there is exactly what you'd expect to see with that kind of an injury. And the last video I saw was of him skating or trying to skate off the ice with a teammate desperately trying to staunch the flow of blood. Unfortunately, unlike the case of Clint Malarchuk, unlike the case of Richard Jednik, which happened in Buffalo, Adam Johnson did not make it. And the arena was cleared in England. And I don't know what kind of medical facilities were at this particular arena. I don't know what kind of medical professionals were at that arena and within walking distance or surgical distance or first aid distance of Adam Johnson. But Adam Johnson died. And, you know, it brings to mind questions about your kids playing sports and your kids playing hockey. Now, when I first heard, I got to tell you something, when I first heard that this guy who played in the NHL, who is now playing in the UK, died in a hockey game, my first thought was, oh, I bet he took a puck to the heart and it was a DeMar Hamlin situation. Then when I found out about the skate blade, I was like, oh, good Lord. And then having seen the videos, I mean, that injury, I would like to believe that had it happened in Buffalo, he might have survived. He very well, well, come on, it's happened twice already. The Sabres medical people and the people they have at the arena for Sabres games for exactly that kind of injury have shown on two separate occasions they can actually save the life of somebody who has that kind of traumatic injury. Now, the degree of similarity between Adam Johnson's injury and Malarchuk's and Jednik's, I do not know. Maybe Adam Johnson was beyond any human aid when that skate went into his neck. Now, some idiots in social media are calling for the player whose skate entered Adam Johnson's neck to be criminally charged. Really? Really? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It was unintentional. It was not negligent at all. The guy was taken out of the play and was upended and found himself. I mean, he's got to feel absolutely horrible. How would you feel knowing that your skate blade killed another player? Whether it's your own team or somebody else's team, that guy is going to need some counseling and some therapy. And I'm telling you, people who are at that game, some of them are going to need some counseling and therapy because unlike Malarchuk and Jednik, which happened in Buffalo, this guy, Adam Johnson, died. And it's a gruesome, grisly video. And again, the similarity between Malarchuk and Jednik and Adam Johnson, whether it was the same depth, whether it was a complete severing, I don't know. I don't know. And I haven't seen the autopsy report at all. And even if I did, I'm not so sure I could understand it. But, I mean, he bled out and it would have been, from what I saw and from what I have read, that kind of an injury can kill you through exsanguination, total bleeding out within 30 seconds. That's how quick things can happen. And I'll tell you a little secret. Back in the 1970s, I played house league hockey in Tonawanda. And I've talked about this before. And at the time when I was playing, not going to lie, we were pretty good. For the times in which we played, we were pretty good. I was a natural goal scorer. Thank you very much. That was my job, to score goals. In other words, camp out in front of the net, cherry pick. That was my goal. That was my job on the team. But I think I played for a year before I realized, you know, every part of my body is protected. My shins are protected. My buttocks are protected. My thighs are protected. My nuts are protected. My shoulders are protected. My elbows are protected. I'm wearing a helmet. I've got a cage What's missing? And then this is before Clint Malarchuk. I said to myself, wow, my neck is exposed. And I don't feel real good about that. So I literally, and I have no idea whether this would have been efficacious or not, but it made me feel better. I was the only kid to wear one. I had my mother make a collar. Make a collar that I wrapped around my neck before every game and every practice in the hopes that it would at least blunt any skate blade that found its way to the area of my neck. So this is a very, you know, look, you got to understand, there's a big difference between playing hockey in the 1970s as a 14-year-old and playing hockey in 2023 as a 14-year-old. And I'm not embarrassed to tell you that if I'm ever at the Northtown Center and I see a bunch of 8-year-old girls playing, they are so much better than we were as 14 and 15-year-old boys. It's not funny. The level of play has been elevated dramatically and drastically in the world of hockey. It has been. You know, today's 7-year-olds are better than we were when we were twice their age in the 1970s. Remember, the Sabres came into existence in 1970 as a National Hockey League team. Still have yet to win a Stanley Cup, even though other teams which have entered the league well after the Sabres have had a slew of Stanley Cup victories, which makes me very bitter. But, I mean, just once could one of our teams win everything? Just once? Is that too much to ask before I check out? Okay, probably. So, anyway, now that we've had a fatality involving, and I don't know how many we've had over the years. I don't know how many have taken place, but there was no video, there was no Twitter, there was no internet. Do you have any fears about your kids playing hockey or any other sport knowing that something like this could happen? It was a freak accident, but freak accidents happen. Ask Clint Malarchuk, who was never the same after that. Clint Malarchuk had a whole bunch of issues after that, and I don't blame him at all. He had severe post-traumatic issues, and who wouldn't? Who wouldn't? I don't know how Zednik is doing psychologically, but physically he survived. But when you come that close and there's videos of it, dudes and dudesses, that's going to mess you up. I'm sorry. If you aren't depressed after something like that, there's something wrong with you. Do you have second thoughts about your kid playing sports because of safety? That is my question to you. And I'll tell you, man, if I had a kid right now playing hockey, I would be out buying anything I could to protect the neck area. Hell, I did it for myself back in the 70s. Why wouldn't I do it now? Just makes sense. And maybe we need to make neck protection a mandatory piece of hockey equipment. It would have to be made, obviously, of, well, there's a number of things of which you could make. You could make Kevlar would probably work very well. But the situation, I'm so sad about Adam Johnson. I didn't know him, never met him, but my goodness, here's this young man born in 1994. 1 minute he's skating healthily down the left wing, and within probably a minute he's dead. Just terrible. Now, these days, now I wore a homemade neck guard of dubious efficacy, but it made me feel better. They actually make now official neck guards, okay? The hockey companies make neck guards. And I got to tell you something. If you were to argue that they ought to be mandatory pieces of equipment, I'm not going to put up a fuss on that. Because, again, I think in Buffalo especially, we're very sensitive to this issue because of Clint Malarchuk in 89 and Richard Zednik a couple of decades later. I mean, we almost literally had people dying on the ice on us here in Buffalo. You and your kids playing hockey, have you gone out to buy neck guards for them? Because if I had a kid playing hockey right now, they would be wearing a neck guard. Absolutely, positively. Understanding that there are a lot of things that can go wrong anytime you've got sharp blades and fast speeds and pucks flying at 100 miles an hour, anything can happen, but you want to be as safe as possible. Here's Gary in Orchard Park on WBEN. Gary, what do you make of this?
Well, Tom, I can tell you, my son played Division I hockey, and so I saw quite a bit of high-level hockey. I also had the opportunity to meet Travis Roy, who wrote a book, 11 Seconds, and he was a quadriplegic in his first hockey game, in his very first shift. So the fact is, you know, while hockey is a beautiful game, there is significant danger that you cannot take out of the game because you've got these guys have clubs in their hands and knives on their feet. So neck guards might, they'll help, but, you know, I've seen players get pretty severe lacerations at the Achilles, above the skate blade,
yep.
Wrists, you know, because they wear the short gloves now. And what I will say is generally the better the player, the safer the player, believe it or not. So while we see these injuries and they're horrific, no amount of equipment is going to take risk out of the game. I mean, you play the game.
No, you cannot. Hold on, Gary. I'd like to talk to you further about this. You cannot totally eliminate risk from life or from sports, but you can mitigate it. You can reduce it. And frankly, I'm not one of these, people who says we need this, we need that to make people safer. But to me, this is a no-brainer. This is not the first time some guy has had his neck sliced open by a skate. This is the third time of which I can even think. And a neck guard is not going to severely impede. It's not going to affect your rotation, your flexion, extension. It's an extra piece of equipment. You know, if you cut an Achilles, it's a painful injury. It rolls up like a window shade. But you're not going to die from it. You can get cuts on your legs, lacerations on your legs, which can be fatal. There are leg arteries. You hit those the wrong way. And if you don't get first, immediate attention, you're screwed. But you, to me, anyway, you try to mitigate the danger. Am I being paranoid, or do you agree with me? 803-0930, star 930, and 1-800-616-WBEN. We'll get back to Gary and others coming up on News Radio 930 WBEN. All right, Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN. Many of you have kids who play ice hockey, and my question is, should neck guards be mandatory pieces of equipment in hockey? And I got to tell you that I believe they should be. Look, they're a long time ago, ladies and gentlemen, National Hockey League players did not have to wear helmets. Those of you who grew up watching the game in the 60s and 70s, you remember Derek Sanderson of the Boston Bruins and his flowing locks. Ron Duguay of the New York Rangers before his teammates gave him a buzz cut when he didn't want one. But the Adam Johnson death really, you know, I think it hits home with a lot of us in Western New York because we have so many kids who play hockey and because we have seen it in Buffalo, New York. I mean, at the National Hockey League level, there have been two neck artery injuries, and they've happened in Buffalo. There is also a femoral artery injury that's in the leg elsewhere. So a lot of places where your body has arteries. And, you know, a lot of them you can tie off, you can tourniquet, but good luck with the neck. You need real specialized care real fast. Gary in Orchard Park, again, let's finish your thoughts about these mandatory neck guards. They're not a very expensive piece of equipment, and nothing as a piece of equipment is ever going to protect you against every injury. But if you can mitigate the danger, why not?
So, Tom, I would say I agree with you in the fact that we will see neck guards. I think we're going to have to see a redesign of the neck guard because the current ones are maybe an inch and a half, and, you know, maybe almost something like a turtleneck with Kevlar. The problem is, and you know this, is that the speed of the game has increased dramatically, and so as the players are hit and they go rotational, the skates come up higher.
Mm-hmm.
So you will not eliminate, you're still going to get these skate lacerations unless you cover that neck literally from the base of the neck all the way up. There's you're not going to eliminate that type of injury. Hockey is still a safer sport than football because when you're hit, your skates break loose. But the problem is because the players are now faster than ever, the equipment is lighter than ever, you know that, composite sticks, composite skates, the skates, when the players get hit, they're going airborne way quicker. A National Hockey League player through the neutral zone might be going 27, 28 miles an hour. They weren't doing that in the 70s. They weren't moving that fast. So, yes, I think you will see some type of neck guard requirement, but you're still going to see that injury. You cannot take it away from the game because the fact is they've got razors on their feet, and if it's exposed, it's going to get hit. So I agree we need to do something, but there's still that risk. I don't think you can take it away completely.
No, you got to risk driving to the rink to play hockey. So you can't do away with that, especially when you're driving in the wintertime. There's always going to be a risk associated with life. But what I'm thinking about here is risk that is avoidable, risk that can be mitigated. Bauer, a very famous hockey equipment company, they make something called the Neck Protect Long Sleeve Base Layer Top, and DuPont Kevlar at the neck and clavicle area for cut-resistant protection. Something like that might make some sense, although there's still a gap in that, so I don't know if they'd have to add more material or what. And I don't know what the discussions are going to be like between the National Hockey League Players Association and the National Hockey League itself. Both sides would have to agree. But when it comes to your kids playing hockey, I mean, again, you're never, as I think we've established, you're never going to eliminate the risk. I mean, you talked about somebody who was, what, 11, 13 seconds in to a level one college career?
Travis Roy, he wrote a book. He went through the ranks, made it to Division One. His parents were at the game, very first game for Boston University. And he actually played, he's a pretty famous guy, and I met him. He just passed recently. But 11 seconds into his first college hockey game, he went to lay a check into a North Dakota player, and he hit his head against the glass, and he became a quadriplegic at the Aganis Arena in front of about 6,000 people. Mm. And I actually met him, and, he was a sweet guy, and I asked him, do you still follow the game? And he says, I follow it. I love it. He teared up. He said, I still dream of skating. I still think of skating. So, there's a guy whose life changed instantly. The truth is, hockey is a violent game. It's less violent than football in the fact that you don't have as many injuries because you're not planted. But it's the only game where we have razors on our feet. And you can never take away the fact that you've got six players on each side with razors on their feet. So I don't know how you're going to eliminate that severe danger of a cut to, say, a carotid artery like we saw over in England.
Well, maybe you start making hockey socks out of Kevlar, which would reduce the risk to the femoral arteries. I don't know how practical that is from a fashion and not aesthetics, but a maneuverability point of view. But, if Adam Johnson had been wearing a neck guard, we probably wouldn't be talking about him today because the blade probably would have just gone off the neck guard and it just wouldn't have been a big deal.
Assuming that neck guard covered his whole neck, if you look at the play, that skate came up pretty high, pretty fast, and pretty violently. So, yeah. Like I said, I agree with you. You need to protect. It's the only game where you've got these razors on your feet, and just it's amazing that people aren't hurt more than they are. But
you talk about Travis Roy, okay? I mean, one danger I don't know how you take away, because I don't think you can take it away. Okay, so you protect a player's neck against a skate blade. There's nothing that says that same player isn't going to come crashing into the boards and hit the neck the wrong way and break a neck. There's nothing that says you're not going to get checked and break a neck.
Right.
But,
well,
Tom, what's the alternative? We all live in bubbles?
Well, like I said, I mean, it's a great game. You played it. Buffalo's a big hockey town. I've seen it played at a high level, and it's a great game, but it's almost an insane game because you're on ice. What game is played on ice with boards? You're in this enclosed arena like a gladiator. It's not even, you can't run out of bounds in hockey, as you know. You get hit. You go into the boards, and Lord knows I've seen too many situations where people would go into the boards head first, and my God, if they don't turn their head away, they could be paralyzed, and it happens every year. So I don't think we're going to stop playing hockey, and I think that parents should let their kids play hockey because it's a great game and they learn great values about winning, losing, and sportsmanship.
But you know what? But here's the thing. I mean, I will tell you right now that if I had a kid that was playing hockey right now, I would absolutely insist that the kid wear a neck guard. Bauer, again, not to plug a company which almost sounds like I could be related to it, but I'm not. They make something called the NLP7 Core Neck Guard Collar. It's a lightweight, adjustable bib. It covers the key areas on your neck with DuPont Kevlar fibers for protection and technology to keep things dry. And I just want to get back to the whole helmet thing. You remember the era, and I bet you do, before players had to wear helmets playing hockey in the NHL?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, do you remember a terrifying moment in Buffalo Sabres history? And again, this would have been in the 1970s, and it involved Rick Martin. And Rick Martin, it was a Saturday afternoon game. Rick Martin had just crossed the opponent's blue line, and he got hit, or he fell, and his head hit the ice, and he then started going into uncontrollable convulsions. Do you remember that moment?
I do. It seems insane that they would play without a helmet now.
It does. But hey, at the time, a lot of people had issues with mandating helmets. But I think the Rick Martin injury had something to do with that being adopted. I'd like to think it did. But this Adam Johnson fatality, players at all levels of hockey should wake up and realize that you got to protect your neck. And look, the thing I wore that mom made in the 1970s, I don't know that it would have stopped anything, but it might have blunted it just enough where it wasn't going to be a fatality. But they make real Kevlar neck guards now, which, again, they might not totally eliminate the risk, but they should mitigate the risk. Like wearing a seatbelt isn't going to save you from dying necessarily in a car crash. It does reduce the odds.
Well, and I agree with you. You're going to probably see an increase in neck protection because it's one thing for someone to get hurt. It's another thing completely different for someone to die on the ice, and they don't want that.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, absolutely. Thank you very much. If you have kids playing hockey, I want to know, have you been looking for neck guards since the Adam Johnson fatality? Adam Johnson played a couple of years in the National Hockey League. He was playing in the UK and caught a blade in the neck, and he died. And it was just absolutely gruesome. The videos are out there. You knew they'd get out there eventually. And they're not very pleasant to watch. And, you know, I remember when Clint Malarchuk almost died on the ice in 1989, I think it was Ted Darling on the TV broadcast who said, get the camera off him, because the camera was on Clint Malarchuk, and you see this poor man bleeding out onto the ice. And, kudos, I think it was Ted Darling who said, get the camera off him. And we don't need to see this. 803-0930, are you going to make your kid playing hockey wear a neck guard? Should neck guards be made mandatory? And, you know, I am inclined to say, yeah, you know what? I think they should be mandatory, because living in Buffalo, we've seen two guys, Clint Malarchuk and Richard Jednik, almost die on the ice in front of us. And you got kids at those games. You've got grown-ups at those games. It was a very traumatic experience. Just watching it on TV was a traumatic experience. The Adam Johnson story is so tragic, and it really hits home, I think, for us in Western New York, because we have actually seen two guys almost die on the ice here in Buffalo, New York. And unfortunately, Adam Johnson did die as a result of a blade to the throat. Let's go to Joe in Cheektowaga. Joe, you're on WBEN. Hello.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Sir.
Yeah, I just have to give a slight bit of pushback. I guess I'm one of the idiots on social media that think this guy should be, Matt Petgrave, his name is, that I think he should be prosecuted for this. It totally looked intentional to me. I mean, I've watched this video for days. I've seen it slow down, super slow-mo. Nobody's leg kicks up 4 feet, 4 or 5 feet in the air in a perfect Bruce Lee style karate kick to somebody's neck in that type of a fashion. The Zednik situation was totally accidental because I forget who hit him in the neck, but he was falling forward in his leg.
His own teammate.
Yeah, that seemed like a natural way that the body would fall. But this isn't just me saying this. It's retired hockey players like Chris Therrien, who's a former Olympian. He even said it looks intentional. So it's not just, you know, goons on the internet. And this guy, Petgrave, has a history of violence. He's used his legs to take out players in other situations. He was kicked out of the previous 2 out of 4 games for violent hits. He, like, led the league in penalty minutes, I think. Now, I'm not saying that he intended to kill him, but his actions led to the death of another person. I would say the same thing if he cross-checked him from behind and paralyzed him from the neck down. He has to pay for his actions. So that's just what I think.
Well, I mean, what you see in the video is this Petgrave guy bumping into another player, and then he goes airborne. And at the speed that they are traveling, I don't know how he could have controlled his legs. I don't know how. I mean, the police are investigating, but I don't see any criminality there. What I see is a freak sports accident.
Yeah, I just think we're going to have to disagree on this one here. I mean, he does kind of slow down to some degree because he lines them up kind of like I'm watching it right now. I mean, he's kind of lining him up to go for a hit, but instead he just kind of lifts his leg 4 or 5 feet off the ice. I just don't think that's a natural way your leg to go up. If you're falling forward, you don't kick up in the air like that. It doesn't look like a complete accident in my opinion. So,
To me, you know, regardless of Petgrave's reputation as the enforcer for the team, I thought, by the way, that term went out the door about 10 years ago in the hockey world. But as far as Petgrave is concerned, regardless of his previous reputation or his previous ejections from games, the question is going to be, is there any criminality that can be attached to it? Or is this going to be a question of they're never going to be able to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt? And I don't know that you're going to be able to ever prove this beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, if the league says you're going to retire, whether you're guilty or not, we'll know.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we got to see with the investigation. So we just got to wait and see what they have to say. But to me, it looks like it was intentional to some degree.
As I watch it, I'm not seeing any intentionality to it. I mean, this guy. Look, one of the problems. Well, it's kind of running out of time here, and I apologize for that. But I mean, one of the issues is anything that you do to some other team's guy can come back and get your guy, unless of course you are the Boston Bruins destroying Ryan Miller at the beginning of a season about 10 years ago, and have nobody come to your defense. Until a few games later when Paul Gostad finally took matters into his own hands. And I'm sure you remember that play. When that play happened, when Ryan Miller got decked, I forget who decked him, and nobody came to Ryan Miller's defense, I said to myself, this team sucks. They're going nowhere. If you can't protect your goaltender, you're going to lose. Thank you for the call. We'll see what happens, Joe.
Yeah, have a good one, Tom.
All right, thank you. All right, Evan DePasquale just gave me a standing ovation. No, when that play happened, I knew the Sabre season was over and they weren't going anywhere, because that's rule number one in hockey. You protect your goaltender. Oh, I've not been a big Boston fan since the days of Wayne Cashman wailing on Maple Leaf Bobby Baughn when he was already down on the ice before the fighting rules came to hockey, where once the guy's down, you stop punching. And before the Philadelphia Flyers, the Boston Bruins were a very rugged hockey team. And in a little-known development, it later on came out that Fred Shiro, Bobby Clark, and all of those guys on the Philadelphia Flyers were, in fact, possessed by demons in 1974-75. Thanks to Evan DePasquale. Thank you to Tanner Saunders. Perfect job today, as always, which we've come to expect from these gentlemen. Tom Puckett is coming up next with Buffalo's Evening News on News Radio 930 WBEN Loves. Thanks for all the calls, and we'll see where the Johnson investigation goes, but I don't know, proving it beyond a reasonable doubt, that's going to be tough.